Mic session number 11202, reel 6.
Mr. J.C. Rogers, reel 6. You were telling me about your arrival in Cyprus, Mr. Rogers, and you spent the first week in a pillbox. What happened next?
Well, just before that, I should really tell you that we were in our company when we embarked and went abroad. And when we got to Egypt, before we went to Cyprus, our company was surplus to requirements. So that was the reason why some of our fellows got drafted to the 3rd Battalion down the island of Kos. And when we arrived in Cyprus, as I said, we were surplus to requirement, and we all joined Headquarter Company. So it was from the Headquarter Company that I had to do my duties in the pillbox, which I was there for a week. Of course, we went into a war zone when we went to Cyprus. So the first thing we had to do was we were on a perimeter of an aerodrome, and the first thing we had to do was dig in. And that was our role right throughout the rest of the war. We'd been promised by Mr. Churchill blood, sweat, toil and tears, and I can safely say that I experienced them all bar the blood, which by the grace of God I missed that. We digging in Cyprus, and what I did find was the exchange rate for our money between Egypt. I think we got 9 pesetas or piastres, not pesetas, piastres in Egypt to our pound. And when we went to Cyprus, it must have been about 13 or 14. So it was a good thing for us. We were be able to buy a lot more with our wages than what we did in Egypt. An example was, while we're digging in, there was a chap come, and he was had a big basket of grapes on the donkey, and he was selling them. And I had a half a crown and a shilling in my pocket. And I offered them a shilling for what he was calling staphylis. They were grapes in Greek. And I gave him the shilling. And he told me to take my topi off. And he filled it right up the top. And I was thinking, if I'd given him half a crown, I would have gotten the donkey as well. So that was the kind of thing we found better, because we went out at night time when we did get a break, and a bottle of wine was only a shilling, and we used to sit in pubs. I believe they call them taverners now when they go on these holidays, but we used to sit in there, and they used to put out little things of nuts and a bottle of wine for a shilling. And if there was three of you and you paid your turn, that was three bottles of wine that was down for the night. So that was where we spent the time, eggs and chips and different things like that. Some of the people could talk English, especially the young ones, because I believe they taught it in the schools. And we got on all right as much as we did. We were 6 miles away from the nearest town.
What was the name of the nearest town?
Nicosia, the capital, and we were 6 miles away from that. So we used to get the Liberty, what we call the Liberty truck in, and they used to wait for us and bring us back at night time. So other than that, we were there expecting the invasion, but nothing happened spectacular. We didn't get bombed, we didn't have aircraft or anything like that. So it was rather a peaceful time that we had in Cyprus. Worked out for us. It didn't work out for other people in the Mediterranean islands, but for us there for that particular time, it worked out like that.
What were your duties at this time?
I was just ordinary infantryman then, because, as I said, I'd been storming in the R company, but I was surplus to requirements, so I was already storming in the headquarter company. So I was just doing ordinary infantry duties.
Who was your commanding officer?
Now, for that beginning, I just couldn't tell you. I don't know whether Captain Scott was made company commander of the headquarter company or not, but I couldn't tell you who the company commander was when we were there.
What were your billets like?
Well, we were dug in slit trenches, and we had bivouacs that we used to put over the top, and that was our billet for the time that we were there. We were out in, as I said, in the war zone, and we were out in the field, as it were. And we just dug in, put the bivouac on the top, and spread the dirt over the top for camouflage, and that was it. I did get a billet to the hospital. I had scabies, it's a disease that gets in between your fingers. It might have been with handling kit, I don't know, but I have a very fine skin, and I'm allergic to some of these kind of things. And I went into the hospital, and there was a remarkable thing there happened. The orderly come in, and he brought me medicine. He said, "Heal your medicine." And I said, "Well, I don't take any medicine." And I thought he was setting me up. He said, "Well, you've got to take it. That's your medicine." So I thought he was setting me up, you know. So I just took the medicine, and there was a tree grown in some sandy soil on the side of where we were, and I just poured the medicine down there, you know. And I said, "That's how I take my medicine." And he got a bit put out, and he said, "I'll get you another one if you don't take this." And I began to wonder, is this fella all right or not? And he brought another bottle of glass of medicine, and I tipped that one as well. In the end, out comes the sergeant, and I was bundled into a office and wanted to know why I didn't take my medicine. I said, "Well, what kind of medicine do you take for scabies?" And of course, there was ruckus on there. Somebody had made a big mistake. But I just thought they were setting me up, because they do that kind of thing in the forces. And two lots of medicine went down the drain. And we did a lot of swimming when we could. We were out in Limassol and different other places. But I don't think there was anything else spectacular that happened in Cyprus.
Was the health of the troops good on the whole?
Well, up to then it was, yes, because there was nothing really. We got away from Egypt, you see, and the sand fly fever and things like that, and dysentery. But we hadn't been in Egypt long, so when we got to Cyprus, yes, I would say that it was good.
Were the officers in similar situations as yourself, in slit trenches?
Oh yes, they would have to always made their own arrangements, and they had to probably a bit bigger, and you know, the officers mess and things, that they would get some other troops to dig out for them, you know.
Did you move to any other position on the island during the course of the time you were
no,
there?
No, just this one place, Lakatamia they called it.
And it was an airfield?
6 mile out. It was an airfield, yes. And all of a sudden, we were told that we were on the move again. So we packed up, and I was left as what you call a rear party for the handover. We always had static stores when we were in positions like that, water and stores. Some of them were dug into the ground, and we called them static stores. That was in case we did have an emergency, and then if the trucks couldn't get through to feed us, we always had something to go at. So I was left as a rear party to hand over these stores to the incoming troops, which were, I believe, the 4th Indian Div. So we did that job, and then I was left with just the QM's corporal and myself. And all the battalion had gone down to Famagusta, the port, ready to go off. So we caught up to them. And in comes about 3 or 4 destroyers. All the men with the kits was lying right along the dock side. And in come these destroyers, and I've never seen anything done so quickly in all my life. They come in sideways into the dock side, and our officers began to give instructions for the men to move up the gangway as quick as possible to get onto these destroyers. And I found then when the senior service took over, the man on the captain of the submarine come out with a megaphone, and he told the major that was giving the order down below, he said that I'm taking over now, and leave it to me. And he didn't have. He had us on that destroyed in less than no time. Just different squad that he was pointing out, and as quick as you can. We got on, and then I went right forward on the destroyer. And when they started off, the waves were just coming straight across. You couldn't see the water then. It was just the point of the destroyer was going. They were travelling that fast. So we wondered what it was all about. The matlots come round and give us some hot cocoa. And then we found ourselves in Beirut.
What time of the year was this?
It would be early November in 1941. And we found ourselves in Beirut. And as far as I can remember, from there, we were taken down by trucks to Jaffa. And we stayed a couple of days or so in Jaffa, did a route march or two, and got a little bit more swimming in, because it was ideal for that. We're right there near the seaside. And I remember one occasion, there was a young fella called Story. We used to call him Jockey Story. He was so small, he always acting a goat. And we were swimming at Jaffa, and doing his usual carrying on, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and he seemed as if he was in difficulties. Well, the chaps, when I shouted to the chaps and told them he was in trouble, they said he'd only acting a goat. But however, he wasn't acting a goat, so I said, I'm going out for him. And I said to a big fella called Lloyd, mind you, what a big fella, I said, you follow me out, because I'm not a very powerful swimmer. So he come out, and we got him back in. Got him on the beach, and he was out all right. And we got him on the beach, and I'd learned a bit first aid in the scouts. And I gave him artificial respiration, and got him brought round. And it was a long walk for the ambulance. They sent for the ambulance, and the stretcher bearers had a long walk for to come down. But they got him back, and he was okay. He come round at night time and thanked us for for helping him out, and sorry for it that he been carrying on so much.
But did you know where you were heading for at this time? Any idea where you were going?
Not then, until we got in Jaffa, and then we found out that we were on our way up to Iraq. The rumour was that the jury was coming through the Caucasus, and we were sent up there for to help to stop them. So that was about as much as happened at Jaffa. Other than the route march, there's an officer who stopped us at the side of a lovely orchard, and we walked for an hour, and then you get a 10-minute break. So we were having our 10-minute break, and it was right outside the orchard, and everybody went in naturally and pulling lovely big Jaffa, that sticks in my memory, lovely big Jaffa oranges off the tree. And of course the officer come down, and he said, do you know that's looting? Well, we said, well, if this is looting, why did you stop us here in the first place? But however, it was just a memory. And for Jaffa, that was it. We, I can't remember how many days we were. And then we set off for Iraq. And we couldn't get, for some reason or another, we couldn't get our own transport. And the drivers were civvy attached. So these drivers took us so far up on the road. And when they got so far, they had to stop. They weren't allowed into the next part of the country where it was. So we had to hike the rest. So for a full, I would think it would be a week, we marched and marched. We marched by day and stopped up overnight for our meal. And then we started off again the next morning. And it was a hike, that it was through the hills, and you're walking up a hill and down into a valley and up a hill, and you couldn't see anything either side of you for about a full week as we went up there. And there was
where did you sleep in?
Well, we just slept where we were when at night time, where just
in
down
the
on the bottom in the open, yes. Uh-huh. And we just, there was one truck, the coach truck, which was following on behind. And as we were moving up there, the lads were getting blistered on their feet and everything. It was a real sticker of a march. But we all managed it all right. We were fit anyway. And all but Jockey Story, and he couldn't, this little fella, he couldn't catch up. So I carried his rifle for him, and I carried the two rifles. And we went up.
What equipment were you wearing?
We nearly always was a short haversack, because the valise, what they call the valise, the big thing, was always onto the truck, and you would be wearing your short haversack, that your mess tin and everything that you would need in emergency.
Do you recall what the weather was like?
Well, it was warm enough then, beginning to get cold. And colder at night time, but for us marching and that, it wasn't really too bad until we got up into Moselle, and that's where we stopped. But on the previous of actually getting to Moselle, the word come that they were turning a guard out of some Iraqi troops along the line, so the word come back to marching like British soldiers. So I must tell you this, Jockey Story is struggling along, and he was so proud to walk in like a British soldier. Could he have his rifle? So I give him his rifle, and he put his rifle on, and we did. We marched to attention for a while, and we marched past his guard, and it turned out, and he hadn't gotten 30 yards or 40 yards past the guard, and he bailed out, and he finished up on the coast truck. But anyway, he showed spirit. And of course we marched and marched, and it was getting monotonous until one time we come over one down into the valley and up onto the hill, and then we looked, and out in front of us was a great range of mountains, and with snow-capped as well. And it was a glorious sight for us, that. So we reached where we were going to. It was a place called Moselle, or Mosel. And it was on a bank side where we were camped, and we hadn't been there one night until there was 9 inches of snow. Pretty unusual for Iraq, but it snowed, and we were under canvas. They went to bed with our clothes on. We had to, we were freezing, and I had a job of dishing out, when it got dark at night time, they give me the paraffin, and it was short, and it should never have been there, because we were on the pipeline, that's where Mosul is, and the paraffin was in short supply, and I had to give them enough for to keep the lamp burning for the particular night, and they just spent the time at night time writing the letters and things like that at home. It got worse, and the trucks were off the road. I couldn't get any trucks, and we were actually short of water. So somebody had the bright idea, there's 9 inches of snow, and somebody had the bright idea, we had to have the evening meal. So we would scoop it, and they gave me the job of about eight or ten men to scoop the snow and put it into the 6 gallon containers. Well, it takes a lot of snow for to fill a 6 gallon container, because as soon as it gets hot, it goes practically to nothing. Some of the fellas were digging a little bit too far down, and yeah, you had to watch them for that. I had to tell them to just scoop the top off. And right outside the camp there had been a dead camel, and we got our mail that day. The dead camel had been there for about 4 or 5 days. We got our mail that day, and it wasn't a bad mail, but the meat was a bit tough, and it might only be a bit coincidence, but the next day the camel was gone. So that's with adapting yourself to the situation. No trucks on the road, no paraffin.
Were you still an infantry man at this stage, or had you gone back to your...
Well, I was an infantry man, yes, but in headquarter company, and I think they must have known a bit of my background, and they used to give me some of these jobs to do, you see.
What about your day? What time did you get up?
Well, I would have to think about that one, because we did our usual guards. I can remember doing a guard there. And the Rudy Valley would be in an early time, I would reckon about 7 o'clock, because the army never let you lie in bed too long. Anyway, you didn't want to. It was absolutely freezing, so you'd be glad to get out. It was so cold that I used to give my cigarette ration away, and they were so cold, the men used to stand around the fire at night time. They used to have these petrol blowers, you know, for the cooks, where they used to cook the meal on, and they used to all stand around there, and I saw them getting something out of a cigarette, and I asked the chap that I would give mine to, to give me one, and I started smoking in Iraq, and I never smoked in my life before. But it proved to be a bit of a consolation to me later on for kind of a nerve steady. So that started me off smoking then.
What kind of duties did you do?
Well, I just can't remember. Other than the odd guards, we went out to collect something at some time, and we went to Baghdad. And we were actually stoned when we went through Baghdad. We weren't very popular at all. And I remember calling somewhere for a bottle of beer, and it cost £1, which is when you consider we were getting a bottle of wine for a shilling in Cyprus, and we had to pay £1 for a bottle of beer in Iraq. But what we did during the day, I couldn't, it would just be ordinary duties taken in.
You're digging defences, were you?
We weren't dug in at Iraq at that particular time. I can't remember digging in at all when we were at Mosul. We were under canvas.
Have you any other memories of Iraq?
Just coming back over when we left there. There's one thing about it was that when you were in Iraq, it was close to the Bible stories, you know. We were on a riverside, I believe it was the River Tigris, I think it was. And you could see the old shepherd with his lambs. And when they come to the river, he would pick the little ones up and put it around his neck, took his gown into his shirt, into his pants or whatever he had on, and put the little lamb round his neck and walk across the river. And the shepherds at night time, they used to have the sheep's skin uncured, I think they were, sheepskin coats.
How did you get over the monotony of the period?
Well, I think just by our own sense of humour, because an infantryman's job is a lonely job, because you're stuck out there, and it's every man for himself. And the only writing letters home, and if it hadn't been for the men themselves just teasing each other and telling stories and joking, especially in places like Iraq, because there was nothing else to do. It was absolutely monotonous.
It didn't show itself in any slipping up in discipline, did it?
No, I don't think so, no.
You had gambling.
No, we never seemed to have much trouble in the battalion as regards to anything like that. You see, because men in places like that, men couldn't get into trouble because there was nothing for them to do. There was no pub, no nothing at night time. You whatever you had to do, you would no doubt, although I can't remember, the army would give you something to do during the day. And at night time, it was into your tents and telling your stories and writing your letters home by the one little pint of paraffin that you got for your light. And when it went out, that was it. But there was one particular night, there was a terrific storm, and the tents were all taken away. The terrible wind, and the men were just running about at about 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning trying to get the tent fixed up again. And I said to them, well, just use your entrenching tools. They were shouting for sticks to put in the ground. So I told them to use the entrenching tool. It was just a chance, but we all did, and we knocked them in, and the QM didn't mind. He said, as long as you got the tents up, he said, you used your initiative, and that was good enough. He said, we'll get some more. Of course, a lot got broken when they were hammering them into the ground. But that was the only way we'd get our tents back up again, because with the rain, it was raining and it was windy, and the soft sand and the pegs come out, and the tents were blown away, and it was just one of them unhappy hours that you have when you're in the army.
Were the officers in any better conditions than yourselves?
Well, I don't know, but they would just be under tents. Whether their tents, if they start to move, the officers would shout for somebody, and they would have the job done. If the pegs were coming out of their tent, they would have somebody put it in. But I don't know whether they suffered anything or not. But all our tents were absolutely taken away.
Was there much gambling?
Well, not there, because we not in the world in the desert, which but not in Iraq. Probably some of the lads would in the tent. You had to do something, do we? You had to play cards, and you know, because I wasn't. I played cards, but. To me, it was monotonous, you know. I'd rather be doing something, writing something out for somebody or helping out.
So you set off to come back. Can you recall how long you were in Iraq?
I can't recall how long we were in, but I don't think we were there very long. And then we
started. 2 or 3 months, something like that?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Well, I couldn't say.
You set off to return.
We set off to come.
What do you recall of the return journey?
Well, then we'd get in transport. So the transport had come up, and our own transport. So we started to move back again. But then we knew where we were going, because they were told us that we were going up into the desert. So we had to make the trek all the way down. And with the usual thing, travelling during the day and lagering up at night time for your meal. And there was one particular time we lagered up, some BF lit a fire on the grass without making a space for the fire first. He was cutting the grass down, he just lit the fire.